ES permit program, as EPA pointed out, that once the end goals are set in terms of final effluent limitations, the compliance is up to the is a case of individual strategy and responsibility. In the construction general permit, the end goals are compliance with locally derived water quality standards, which brings in the entire local nature of the program, and national technology controls. In all cases, the construction general permit must be flexible enough to account for local regulations associated with building permits, with other site-specific variables, while balancing the national scope of the permit itself. In terms of these technology considerations, general permits are valid under the Clean Water Act. EPA need only establish best professional judgment for the general permit, not for each individual site, as I mentioned. EPA's technology assessments are evidenced by the many mandates in the permit, which has evolved over these three cycles. I think, and finally, the issue of the Stormwater Pollution Prevention Plan and inspections. Inspections are conducted throughout the country. EPA has an inspection program itself and a strategy that its enforcement office has outlined. These inspections are significant, have resulted in significant fines. To assume that the EPA or anybody else would be able to look at the notice of intent or the Stormwater Pollution Prevention Plan without understanding the site itself and be able to assess compliance right there on the spot would be an impossible task, which leads us to this individual permit idea that the only way you'd be able to do it would be on a site-specific basis. In fact, these stormwater pollution prevention plans are assessed on a site-specific basis during this entire inspection process. With regards to the notice of intent process, it's different than an individual permit, and that the individual permit application initiates the development of the process. We believe and assert here that the NOI is not the application process. The application is something that EPA does on its own when it decides that it must generate a general permit for its administrative convenience. And that that notice of intent is merely the permittee's statement that it is eligible for the permit, it will comply with the permit, and it will meet the final goals of the permit. And by signing on the line, that's what generates all of the environmental protections.
Is that kind of like an application for a permit?
It's not an application. The permit is drafted. An application on an individual permit would initiate an entire review of the site to create a permit for that site.
So that has to be specifically applied for then?
That would be a specific individual application, and EPA has the authority to require any single site to apply for an individual permit. Just because they have a general permit system doesn't provide the right to the discharger just to get a general permit at any cost. EPA can identify those sites that may have particular concerns of it to it and then mandate that that site get an individual permit. It would apply for a permit, and then through the application process, a draft permit would be developed, and it would be very site-specific. With regards to the general permit is designed with necessary flexibilities but certain mandates and certain end goals and effluent limits. It's out there. It goes through the notice and comment process. Everybody has an opportunity to comment on its contents. Once it's done, the permittee is not applying for it. They are asserting that they will comply with that existing permit. In closing, I'd just like to state that EPA has made reasonable decisions with regards to the construction general permit structure. The permit requires water quality protection while allowing economic growth, and it should be upheld. And NRDC has presented no convincing reason to overturn the construction general permit. Is that any further questions?
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. I guess that leaves with Ms. McQuaid. I believe you had some time for rebuttal. 3 minutes.
May it please the court. I'd like to start, Judge Bauer, by answering your question, at least with respect to oil and gas construction activities in the United States. There are an estimated 30,000 per year currently. That will likely grow because of demand primarily for natural gas to 48,000 to 50,000. That's shown in Independent Petroleum Association of America's comments in the administrative record. I'd like to start by addressing Mr. Greenberg's suggestion that the information in the fact sheet is mere guidance. It isn't. It is an interpretive interpretation of the word common plan, and it's the only place that any such interpretation appears, which is in the fact sheet. If you don't look to the fact sheet, you don't know what the term common plan means at all, either with respect to oil and gas activities or with respect to conventional construction activities. The fact that it appears in the fact sheet doesn't render it any less final. It's the consummation of the agency's decision-making process after notice and opportunity to comment. It's been approved at the highest levels of the agency, and it's the definitive statement of what they mean by the term common plan in the context of oil and gas activities. It also has substantial legal consequences. EPA expresses that they intend immediate compliance with the information guidance provided in the fact sheet. They say if we're in doubt, we're to overestimate or risk Clean Water Act penalties and delays. And it's not only EPA that is of concern. Citizen attorney generals, such as hostile surface owners and third-party opponents of oil and gas activities, could use this definition. We're really placed to the Hobson's choice of either not getting a permit and risking enforcement, but incurring the delays associated with the due diligence and potential consultation processes of doing that, or getting a permit and getting the permit and risking the delays associated with consultation processes, or not getting a permit and risking enforcement either by EPA or Citizens Attorney General. And that renders this guidance in the fact sheet final agency action, both under the Appalachian Power case that we cited in our briefs and in a case cited by NRDC, Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce, which, although was a ripeness case, found that substantial harm existed where industry was put to a choice between compliance and enforcement, or in that case, suspension. I'd also like to – I see my time is up. If anyone has any questions, I'll answer them. Otherwise, my argument is concluded.
Okay. Thanks very much to all counsel. Mr. Sullivan, your time has expired, but I would ask that you put your best foot forward on a supplemental memo or something on standing. If you do that, I'd like to have that 10 days or 2 weeks, as quick as you can get it.
Yes.
As said, this case will be taken under advisement. We'll move on to the next case.